Go on.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Yes. It's good now.
Oh, it went away. Okay. I didn't touch it. Good job.
School going well?
Quick. I think it's probably already done with my first one. That's already
Is it only for us, like a quarter?
8 weeks of half, none half, second half, the first half, one second half.
A two for the whole semester, and then I've got if there's
10 hours. Wow. I can't believe it.
And Craig and Karen and get next semester.
What are they doing?
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am. I try to be sometimes.
I know that's easy.
Yeah. But it's not Tuesday, so I won't be able to come
in like that. Kevin,
I'll just get you a key.
There's also copies, about copies
of the audit if you want to take.
Okay, I can
do
that electronically, but thank
you. Okay, according to my computer, it is 5:01. So let's get this show on the road. Call the meeting to order, 5:01. And could we have a roll call, please? Stacy?
Bounce?
Here.
Broomfield?
Here.
Buckingham?
Here.
Ann Chandler?
Here.
Jenna Griffith? Sarah Hill?
Here.
Ann Johnson?
Here.
Kevin Kelsey.
Here.
Tammy Kraus.
Here.
Latos.
Here.
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 Here. Sorry.
Linda McDonald.
Here.
Emily Piquel.
Here.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see if I can remember to get through everybody this time. Carbondale office.
Colleen Dettenmeyer.
Casey Parr.
Ellen Poppett. Anna Yackel.
Thank you. Champagne.
Leslie Bednar.
Linda Cates.
Okay. There are only the two of us at Brim. Illinois State Library.
Mark Schaefer.
Did I get everybody, or do we have some folks on Zoom?
Shirley Payton in Edwardsville.
Cassandra Thompson.
Leah Gregory.
Rhonda Jonassy.
Jill Trevino.
Stacy Bushon.
Matt Kasky.
Edward Phillips on here. That's what I missed. Okay, is that everybody? Thank you. All right, moving on to the consent agenda requires motion and roll call. All items listed are considered routine. Unless someone wants to pull anything out, we would entertain a vote.
I'd like the minutes pulled, please.
All right. Then we will approve them one at a time. We need a motion and second for approval of the minutes from August 22nd.
Josh, so moved.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, I didn't hear who that was.
Christy Lear.
Thank you. You have quite an echo.
So did somebody just join the Zoom room in Champaign? You need to make sure your speakers are down and your microphone is muted.
Do you need to
hold on just a second? We have to unmute Champaign manually here. Something happened. There's nothing to click on there, Leslie. It'll just take it a couple seconds to unmute. There we go. Now they're back.
Okay. I believe we are ready for the roll call vote. Stacy?
Karen Bounds.
Yes, and you're still cutting in and out.
Loretta Bloomfield?
Yes.
Frank Buckingham?
Yes.
Ann Chandler?
No.
Jenna Griffith? Sarah Hill? Sarah Hill? Ryan Johnson?
Yes.
Kevin Kelsey?
Champagne has disconnect.
No,
we're not.
Hold on. Is there a chat box in the Zoom at all?
I exited.
Can you hear us now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, so I don't know what I'm voting for because you guys lost us and started a roll call. So what are we voting for right now?
You're voting for the approval of the minutes from August 22nd.
Okay, So earlier my name was called, but I don't think you guys heard anything from us.
Okay. Sarah Hill.
So yes, from me.
Okay. Kevin Kelsey.
Yes.
Tammy Krause.
Yes.
Lytos.
Yes.
Christy Lear.
Yes.
Linda McDonald.
Yes.
Emily Pickell.
Yes.
Josh Short.
Yes. Is that everybody? Okay. Now we are going to go on to the director and staff activity report. Need a motion and a second to approve this. Do we have a motion?
This is Ann. I'll make that motion.
Okay, Ann, do we have a second?
This is Kevin. Yes. I'll second.
Which Kevin? I'm sorry.
Lytos.
Thank you. All right. Could we try to have a roll call again?
Karen Bounds.
Well, I heard my last name. Yes.
Loretta Brimfield.
Yes.
Frank Buckingham.
Yes.
Ann Chandler.
Yes.
Sarah Hill?
Yes.
Yes.
Kevin Kelsey?
Yes.
Tammy Krause?
Yes.
Lytos?
Yes.
Christy Lear?
Yes.
Linda McDonald?
Yes.
Emily Pickell?
Yes.
Josh Short?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Motion carried. Moving on. Acceptance of August bills from 2023. That is your attachment 4.1.
I'd like the bills that are considered working lunches in the amount of $1,058.99 polled for a separate vote.
Second.
So there's no motion to approve yet. That's the motion to not add those.
This is
Do
Josh.
Do you want a motion to approve an amendment?
This is Josh.
Okay, we need a motion to approve.
I'll move to approve. This is Kelsey.
This is Josh.
Second. This is Latos.
Thank you.
It's just easier.
All right. We'll pull the working lunches for a separate vote.
So, point of order. You need a motion to amend before you can do that.
Okay.
And I move to approve the amendment of the whole bill.
All right. Motion to amend then.
And now you need a second if that's the motion.
Do we have a motion to amend?
This is unnecessary, but I'll make that motion.
It's not unnecessary.
All it is to require a different motion on approval or no approval, but I'll make the motion.
Do we have a second? Hearing none, we're going to
You can't deny them being pulled.
I'm sorry?
Every board member has a right to pull for a separate vote.
There's no second.
Now, how so, people vote on that is, of course, up to them.
So I made the motion to approve it in total. You're asking to pull things. That requires a separate motion with a second. If there's no second, then we don't pull. That's Robert's Rules of Order. Sorry.
Then the motion would be to not approve the working lunches. In the amounts of $1,058.99.
But you have to have a second in order for that to be called for a vote. If there's no second, the motion is...
As it was.
It dies.
Well, I will investigate that further, but I've never been in a meeting where a board member has not been allowed to pull, and then the vote is as such on the bills that were pulled. Positive or negative, whichever way the board wanted to do it. But you're denying that.
No, not denying it. You have the motion. You made the motion. There's no second. It's pretty simple. So
you're denying me the right to have a separate vote on the working lunch is what you're doing.
After the motion, now there's discussion. You can discuss all you want. And that's where we're at, I think, Karen.
Yeah. If there's no further discussion, we're going to go ahead and do a roll call vote on the original motion and second to accept the August bills. Hearing nothing further, Stacy, would you do a roll call? And this is on the original motion to approve the August bills of 2023.
Karen Bounds?
Yes.
Loretta Broomfield?
Yes.
Fred Buckingham?
Yes.
Anna Chandler?
No.
Sarah Hill?
Yes.
Ryan Johnson?
Yes.
Kevin Kelsey?
Yes.
Tammy Kraus?
Yes.
Kevin Lantos?
Yes.
Christy Lear?
Yes.
Linda McDonald?
Yes.
Emily Pickell?
Yes.
Short.
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carried. Do we need to close that door? Moving on to the August 23 financial report, attachment 5.1. Rhonda, do you want to address the board?
Sure. Good evening, everyone. I'll highlight some of the items in your financial statements tonight. Regarding the FY 2024 grant status, I mentioned last month that all the grants have been approved by the Illinois State Library. The only receipts that we have received for FY 2024 grants is the receipt of $335,000 or 48.8% of the CNC grant funds. That's almost half of the CNC grant award for this year. In the financial report included in the packet, they reflect activity through August 31st, 2023. And in those statement of revenue and expenditure statements, the target benchmark of the remaining budget should be 83% for all budget line items, except for personnel, which should be 85% based on the total of 26 payrolls for the fiscal year. And that is in the column, the IHLS approved FY 2024 total budget remaining percentage. So any expenditures with percentages lower than the target benchmarks are noted with an explanation at the bottom of each statement of revenue and expenditure. On those statements in the general fund, the year-to-date actuals are below year-to-date budget for the revenues of 84.3%, and that's because we have not received any grant funding for the systemary per capita grant this year yet. And on the total expenses, the year-to-date actuals are below year-to-date budget by 12.1%. So we're doing really well on the expenditure side. On the share statement of revenue and expenditures, the fees for services and materials, the year-to-date actuals of $1,387,528.77 represents 89.3% of the projection FY24 budget. And as of August 31st, 83.9% of that amount has been collected. So we've done really well with our collections from our annual billings in July for share. On the total expense side, the year-to-date actuals are above year-to-date budget by 44.5%. And that's because they have large expenditures every year, the beginning of the year, to get started and pay for those subscriptions that are billed to the members. On the balance sheet, for the general fund, as of August 31st, the total balance of cash was $4,892,783.73. This would fund IHLS general fund operations for an estimated 12 months based on the FY24 expenditure level. And it would also fund IHLS general and special revenue funds, excluding the CMC, because we've received almost half of their funding for almost for an estimated 11 months. On the share cash and cash equivalents, as of August 31st, their total cash balance was $2,905,280.75. And they're separated into three different categories. So on their share reserves, they have $924,098.03. They have committed funds for ebook cloud purchases of $107,235.01. And on their unrestricted or operating cash, they have $1,873,947.71. So that unrestricted operating cash would fund share operations for an estimated 10.3 months based on their FY24 operations budget. Does anybody have any questions for me? Okay, thank
you. Don't hear any. Thank you. Okay, we need to approve the August 23 financial report. Anyone have a motion to approve?
This is Josh. So moved.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Linda, yes. Second.
Thank you. I believe Jenna has joined us. So, Stacey, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Karen Bounds?
Yes.
Greta Broomfield?
Yes.
Frank Buckingham?
Yes.
Ann Chandler?
Yes.
Jenna Griffith?
Yes.
Sarah Hill?
Yes.
Ryan Johnson?
Yes.
Kevin Kelsey?
Yes.
Tammy Kraus?
Yes.
Ben Latos?
Yes.
Elier?
Yes.
Linda McDonald?
Yes.
Emily Piquel?
Yes.
Josh George.
Yes.
Okay, I think I heard everybody answer. Thank you, motion carried. Okay, going on to the annual report. The two primary components of the annual report are the audit and the narrative, and both must be approved by the board so they can be sent to the Illinois State Library no later than September 30th. We can approve one at a time or both together. We do have to have the motion and roll call vote on this one. So, for the financial audit, Leslie, do you want to?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. So we're really happy to have with us tonight Josh Andres and Alex Hoffman from Sheffield Boyle. I believe they're going to just give us an overview. Is that correct, gentlemen? Okay. Take it away.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
My name's Josh Andres. Some of you may remember from previous years, but I'm the principal on the engagement, and then Alex Hoffman, he's the manager on the engagement, and he's really the one that works closely with Rhonda and staff and gets all the information necessary to put the audit together. So we appreciate that, and we appreciate the relationship that we have, and just want to say thank you. And so what we have, I believe everybody should have probably a PDF copy of the whole bound audit report, but then we have like a two to three page just shorter version just to hit on some highlights that we'll run through. And then, you know, certainly if anybody has any questions, happy to take those, or if you think of something later, Leslie or Rhonda or anybody knows how to get a hold of us. So, you know, feel free if something comes up at a later point in time. So, you know, the whole process is for us to come out there and gather enough support and evidence from the numbers themselves to then be able to present an opinion on the financial statement. So the financial statements themselves are Illinois Heartland's financial statements, and then our portion of the audit is the opinion on the financial statements. So our opinion is found on pages 1 through 3, and that is the independent auditor's report. And so our opinion is that the financial statements present fairly in all material respects. And so that's typically referred to as an unmodified or clean opinion, which is the best opinion that we can offer. So that means we were able to gather enough support and evidence to say the numbers are materially correct. And so, again, that's a tip of the cap to say that, you know, all the information was there, and Rhonda and her team does a great job in supplying us that information, and having it readily available. So, in certain years, we're also tasked due to the amount of federal funds that are received and expended. Once that reaches over $750,000 of expenditures in a particular year, then we have to do something called a single audit, which is an additional sort of engagement in relation to the full financial statement audit, where we have to test, you know, the federal dollars and make sample selections related to that. So this particular year, we did have a single audit because of the iLead monies that came in. There's always about a $650,000 federal portion of the per capita grant, but then the iLead monies pushed us over that $750,000, a little over $800,000 of expenditures in the current year. So pages 4 through 8 are the letters in relation to the single audit. And so we have a report on internal control over financial reporting, and then an internal report on compliance for each major federal program. So I'm happy to say there were no federal findings related to the federal funds. And if there were, you know, issues, we would have them reported in the full bound audit report at the back. And so We did have one finding, which is just our standard finding, and the standards state that if we are, you know, instrumental in putting the full bound audited financial statements together, they deem that, you know, a deficiency of sorts. They say that an organization should be able to hand us the financial statements and then we audit them. Now, in about 99.9% of the clients that we audit, that's, you know, that's not the case. So, you know, Ford Motor Company or somebody like that probably has an internal accounting staff that can do that. But most of the organizations that we audit don't have, it's not cost beneficial to, you know, have somebody stay on top of all the training necessary to be able to put those reports together. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong. It's just something that we do have to report within the financial statements themselves, is that we were part of that process. So in this full bound audit report, there's kind of two sets of financial statements. Pages 17 and 18 are on the full accrual method of accounting. And that is things such as your fixed assets or long-term debt are carried on the balance sheet. Or your net pension sort of asset or liability in relation to IMRF, those things are carried on the balance sheet and then, you know, kind of used over their useful life or paid down as the debt gets paid down, et cetera. And then subsequent pages in the report are on the modified accrual basis of the accounting. And those type of expenditures are just expensed as incurred instead of set up and maybe amortized or depreciated over their useful lives. And so on the full accrual method of accounting, there was a change in net position of a net loss of $227,000 for the current year. The biggest piece of this is, you know, related to IMRF. And so each year IMRF goes through an actuarial study that then the state issues their report and that we utilize to book a net pension asset or net pension liability related to that. And that's really based on market. And so as the market goes up or down based on the, you know, their actuarial report, that has a major impact on the entries that have to be made on that presentation. So the market for the year ended 22 was in a better condition. So had a positive impact, and the market for the 23 presentation was down quite a bit. And so that's why we have a negative impact there. So then moving forward, page 19 and on, this is really more on how you all operate. And so page 19 is really the balance sheet. And this is, we gave a sort of a snapshot here of the funds and their cash balances. And Rhonda kind of alluded to this in her portion as far as, you know, the amount of cash on hand, et cetera. This is kind of what we're trying to present here as well. And this is as of June 30th. So numbers are slightly different, but overall in the general fund, we had about a $5.5 million balance, up a little bit from the year ended 2022. CMC grant fund was pretty consistent there at about 47,000. Capital projects went down about 470,000, mainly due to some new vehicle purchases. I believe a new roof was installed. So there was some utilization of the cash flows within that fund in this year. And then we have our non-major funds, which is really the OCLC and the ILEAD. And you know, those are grant funds that are, you know, expensed as money comes in. So very little cash, you know, on hand within those funds. Did note there that the area and per capita grant had been paid in full as of 6/30/23. There had been some years where there were some big outstanding receivables. So cash fluctuations are impacted by that. But the last couple of years, that has all been paid in full as of the end of the year. And now page 21, that was the balance sheet I was talking about. Page 21 is really more the income statement. And again, same similar snapshot there in a comparison between the years. And this is specific to the general fund here at the bottom of the page. Overall receipts were $4.4 million. And up from about 700,000 from the prior year, and this was mainly due to an increase in the area and per capita grant of about 520,000 for the year. So that was the biggest piece of the increase in the overall receipts within the general fund. And then the disbursements were also up. You know, you guys are fully aware, and the industry's, you know, done the same thing, including us as, you know, a firm where payroll expenses have, you know, increased significantly in order to keep people on staff, to keep the good people there. You know, we've had increased payroll costs. So overall payroll costs were up about 180,000, you know, from 22 to 23. And so that is the big reason why of an increase in expenses between the 2 years. We have our normal operating transfer out over to the share fund. And so that's the 300,000 there. And so in the general fund, we had a net positive 400 and almost 24,000 for the year ended June 23. Flipping over to the next page is the CMC grant fund. So there was more funding in the current year, 640,000. So you see an increase in receipts and then a corresponding increase in expenses. So no real surprises within that fund. Capital projects fund, receipts are up a bit. Interest income, you know, as rates kind of came back, there was more interest earnings in on the accounts with the money held. So that's why receipts are up. Disbursements, we kind of talked about those, new roof, new vehicles, new server. So expenses were up about 350,000 between the 2 years. And then we had some insurance proceeds, which is coming through on the gain of disposal of fixed assets from a car crash that incurred. So overall, capital projects fund was a net loss of 470,000. But as I kind of mentioned before, on that full accrual method of accounting, those things are capitalized and depreciated over a useful life. So it doesn't take a hit to the bottom line, where the roof, the cars, the server, those are directly expensed out in this set of books. So, you know, all those are being deducted in this current year. The non-major funds, the ILEAD and the OCLC, you know, the ILEAD grant was new, as we mentioned, and which pushed us over the federal funding. So that's why we have an increase in receipts and disbursements, you know, within those non-major funds. So overall, you know, again, a good year from a, you know, positive standpoint. The general fund had a, you know, positive ending net income for the year. We have a sufficient cash flow sort of sitting on hand, or a cash surplus. Typically, we like to see at least 6 months of reserve on hand just in case things come up. And so you guys are above that. So, you know, that's a positive in case there were shortages on when monies were flowing through the state. And so so you guys are in a strong cash position there. And then on the final page, we have the share fund. And so we have revenues were about 1.6 million in the current year. There was, you know, again, this is a lot impacted by the IMRF adjustments that were made. In the previous year, we had, you know, income being reported based on those adjustments in the operations of the investments in that IMRF fund, where this year we actually had expenses. So we saw, you know, a big change in operations. But, you know, probably the other biggest thing is, you know, there was a cataloging project for $165,000 in the prior year. That's not included in the current year. So, you know, that was probably the biggest change from the revenue side. And then, you know, the other items there related to the IMRF changes. And then we see the $300,000 coming in from the general fund. So overall, we had a small net loss of $66,000, but a lot of that, again, is really due to non-cash changes related to those IMRF adjustments. The rest of here is just some quick budget to actual for your information. and then some pages within the financial statements that give a little bit more detail to the capital assets or debt and the IMRF defined benefit pension plan there on pages 41 through 45. One thing I did want to note, there was a new accounting pronouncement, GASB 96, that we did have to implement. That's related to subscription-based technology service arrangements. And through our, you know, review, there was none that we had to take into consideration. So even though we did implement a new pronouncement in the current year, there was no material effect to the financial statements themselves. Also, while we're out there, we do what's called an agreed upon procedures engagement related to the OCLC activity that's handled, by the library system, for the state. And so we went through that activity and found, no issues related to those agreed upon procedures as well. Last thing I have, I know I'm trying to go quick for you all, is what's called our SAS 114 letter. This is just required communications, and I believe everybody should have gotten a copy of this, but this is just required communications that we're supposed to have with those charged with governance, which is the board. This just forces communication in case, we didn't have a meeting of this nature. But if we were to have problems or issues or anything like that, we would have to document those within this letter and then discuss them in this format. But we are happy to say we didn't have any of those issues. We really enjoy working with Rhonda and the staff, and so no problems there. If we had to consult any sort of outside third parties, which we did not, so we didn't have anything related to that. And then we do have to include, if material, any sort of adjustments that we have to make to the financial statements. So there is a couple pages attached to this letter that just bring you up to speed of what adjustments that we did have to make. A lot of them are just reclassification adjustments, or we're adjusting for compensated absences or things like that. They are there for you to view. But otherwise, it's a boring letter, and that means it's a good letter, because that means there's really nothing for us to talk about. So I know I tried to go fast there, and hopefully everybody's still awake. But does anybody have any questions for us?
I have one. Hey, you said that there was a loss of like $250,000 based on IMRF. Changes in the markets, equity markets, bond markets, or just financial markets in general?
Financial markets in general, but if you, in page 44 of the financial statements, there is a breakdown of the allocation that the IMRF has its investments in, and then the return for the actuarial period that they, did the study on. So there's equities, fixed income, real estate, and then the returns. And you can see that the returns were, negative for the period, and why we are showing such a loss for this time around.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions? Okay, hearing none, let's move on to the narrative.
Thank you. So attachment 6.3, as Karen referenced, is the narrative. That's a group effort, to be honest. Department heads or project managers share bits of information, and then Carol puts it together as far as the narrative goes. There are other components as well. And those are all we used to call them tabular components. Now we just call them tabular, components. So that's all laid out as well. And this all takes a lot of effort on the part of a lot of staff to get this together. So do you have any questions about the annual report as a whole, or the narrative specifically?
I was wondering on where these salaries are posted on the website. I know if there's a certain amount they were supposed to be, and maybe I just couldn't find it, but wondered where that was.
Right. Troy's not here. Rhonda, could you speak to that or about how they're posted? I mean, I know they're not like just.
Do you mean in the annual report itself or?
On the website.
I think she means like including your IMF benefits and stuff.
I believe it's 75,000 or over. It's supposed to be posted. I just wondered where it was posted because I could never find it.
Well, we have a notice on the website that you can contact us for a copy of that. That's you're allowed to do that if you have a website to the public. So if you're if somebody requests it, it has that request process there on the website. Let me see exactly where that is.
The other one I saw was you had 6 vehicles for staff use. Is there a reason we have this many or a reason we don't have the staff just drive if they need to, or what's the rationale behind that?
So each building has 2 vehicles, the same vehicles, a minivan and a Ford Taurus, basically. We use those if possible, and they're getting used more because we're going, more of us are going places, and there are days when there's no vehicle available at any location because they've already been reserved. So that's why we would do that. Use our own vehicles.
If you go to our website under About Us and go to the Board of Directors, and then if you like scroll down on the right hand side there, there's a section that says governance documents. That's where all of our policies are found there. And then the OMA required stuff is at the bottom there.
Thank you, Colleen.
Yep.
And that's where that notice is put?
Correct. If you scroll all the way to the bottom, there's a section that's titled Other. And then it's got like the list of all of our annual filings by fiscal year, our mission, and then it's got the IMRF employer cost OMA disclosure there.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, are there any other questions? If not, since we don't have to vote on components, I would entertain a motion to accept both the financial audit and the narrative together instead of having to go through 2 roll calls. Would someone like to make that motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. I don't know who said so moved. Who made the motion, please?
McDonald.
Thank you. And who seconded?
Chelsea.
Thank you. Okay. Stacy, would you call the vote, the roll call, please?
Ken Bounds?
Yes.
Broomfield? Loretta Broomfield?
Yes.
Frank Buckingham?
Yes.
Ann Chandler?
Yes.
Jenna Griffith?
Yes.
Tara Hill?
Yes.
Ryan Johnson?
Yes.
Kevin Kelsey?
Yes.
Tammy Krause?
Yes.
Matos?
Yes.
Christy Lear?
Yes.
Linda McDonald?
Yes.
Emily Pickell?
Yes.
Josh Short?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carried. Leslie, you want to address the components portion?
Right. So this is all administrative information that we have to share with the State Library annually. It, in some ways, it's a lot. like the information that we share with the Sister Mary per capita grant application itself. But we want to share that with you in case you have any questions. And once this is Stacy, you can correct me. Once this is sent to the state library, we wait for their approval to post.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So it'll be in the same place that Colleen pointed out on our website when it's done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to the team at IHLS who collected all this information, and thank you to the auditing team. Okay, moving on. Freedom of Information Act, there was nothing to report for this evening. Open Meetings Act, nothing to report. Public comment, no public comment registered as of today. Illinois State Library, Mr. Schaefer, you still with us?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Good evening. My name is Mark Schaefer, and I'm a consultant in the Library Development Group here at the Illinois State Library. And on behalf of Secretary of State and State Librarian Alexi Janulius and our director, Greg McCormick, I bring greetings from the State Library. A little bit about me, just quickly, for those of you who I haven't met or talked to before. My main area of focus are administering the two public library construction grant programs. And I also work with the Literacy Office administering literacy grants. And then, as we all do, I have another title that says all other duties as assigned. So a lot of times I'm involved in many different things, constituent calls quite often, a lot of public libraries think that I'm a lawyer. Because they call me about the administrative rules, and I try to direct them to the correct place. But I have to warn them that I cannot give legal advice. I do the best that I can, and I end up sending them to their lawyer in the end. I'm in my 18th year here at the State Library, and I'm in my 30th year with the Secretary of State's office. So I'm happy to announce that I will be giving a very short report tonight. I wanted to bring everybody up to date that the administrative rules concerning Public Act 103-0100, which amends the Illinois Library System Act to help protect against attempts to ban, remove, or otherwise restrict access to books or other materials, have been published in the Illinois Register. It is issue number 36, if you go online to look. And the public comment period is now open. This period will remain open until October 25th. Any public comment on these rules must be sent and addressed to the Secretary of State's General Counsel, not to the Illinois State Library. Now, the State Library's grant offerings for the annual construction grant program for public libraries, which was formerly known as the Live and Learn Construction Grant, that's in part of the rule changes. The General Assembly eliminated the Live and Learn line item. So now it's just going to be called the Public Library Construction Grant Program. Along with the Public Library Per Capita Grant, it's going to be announced in the very near future. The offerings will be up and open. Both grants are due after the first of the year, which is the enactment date of the Public Act 103-0100 on the book banning. So libraries need to have the policies in place prior to submission of the applications, either the construction or your library per capita grant. The school district per capita grants are due October 15th. We are receiving those. It's coming in quickly right now. So far we have received 391 applications from a possible 721 eligible school districts, which equates to 54%. The State Library will be sending out a submission reminder, and we'll be working with the systems and contacting school libraries to ensure that they apply for these grant funds. And then lastly, we are excited to announce that during ILA, here at Springfield at the end of October, Secretary Janulius will be addressing the conference and will also be holding a reception for the attendees here at the Illinois State Library on the evening of October 25th. If you're going to be at ILA, come to the Illinois State Library that evening. You can rub elbows with the secretary. And I'm not quite sure what the night is going to entail, but more information on the reception will be forthcoming. And that's my report.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Schaefer? Hearing none, we will move on to communication. Leslie?
Thank you. Late last week, our colleagues at ILE reached out and asked if the IHLS board would consider there's a statement that they've drafted and approved in support of paraprofessionals in school libraries. So to date, ILE, the school library group, Illinois Library Associations, and Rails boards have approved it. It wasn't on your agenda as an action item. I didn't change the agenda. I can, if you have questions, we can talk about it now, or we could, and or do it in October. Okay, moving on. I don't know that Mark mentioned it, but the Illinois Public Library Internet Survey is now live. And there's a lot of information that it asks from our members, a lot of specific information. And so Troy Brown has been fielding calls and then making little videos that go in each of the FAQ sections. And if you go to our website, right at the top of the homepage, there's a link to that page in general, and lots of good information there, as well as access to the survey from there. Any questions? Thank you.
Okay. I believe we are at board learning, board intranet overview.
Actually, we're at the, we have a
Did
presentation.
I skip something?
Yeah, A.
Oh, sorry.
Is Leon Ruin, are you here? Dr. Ruin?
Leanne, unfortunately, wasn't able to join tonight, so she asked me to speak on her behalf.
Thanks, Kelda.
All right, well, I'll just share my screen real quick for you all. All right, can everybody see that?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Oh, sorry, it says it's loading, but I'll get started here. So my name's Kelda Habing. I'm the Research and Grants Librarian at the Illinois Fire Service Institute Library, which is a part of the University of Illinois. I'm here tonight on behalf of Leanne Ron, who's our project director, as well as the head librarian at the Fire Service Institute Library. I'd just like to give you all a quick overview of this really exciting grant project that we just received from the Institute of Museum and Library Services. Libraries as partners for emergency preparedness and response in times of crisis.
Hey, Kelda, this is Matt Caskey from IHLS. Can you stop that share and then try it again?
I'm sure about partnership between. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Sorry, my screen, I had a PowerPoint, but it says it's loading and it's had the spinning wheel of doom.
Again. Kelda, can you hear me?
Yes, it's, I'm very sorry. My screen was loading. I can go on without my PowerPoint, however. I don't think my internet here is stable enough for the PowerPoint to be shared with you all. So as I was saying, this is just a preliminary investigation into how libraries of all types can partner with community emergency response groups such as the fire service, EMS, and local or state health departments during widespread crises. This could be anything from natural disasters such as flooding or severe weather to gun violence or public health crises. We'll be focusing on three areas: emergencies, scope and nature of partnership, and the role of libraries in partnership. And the primary purpose of this project is that while we know that libraries may assist their communities during emergencies, it's not clear if or how often libraries partner with these emergency response groups to increase their ability to provide services during emergencies. So that's really the goal of this project. It's divided into 2 years. Our first year is focused on a case study survey of Illinois libraries, where we will just be searching for a fundamental understanding of library community partnerships during emergencies, taking Illinois libraries as the microcosm of the greater national library community and the current situation of partnerships between libraries and emergency response partners during emergencies. So during year one, it's really crucial that our state advisors, which IHLS is one of them, assist us with kind of disseminating the survey to your communities, so we can really try and get representation from as wide an array of Illinois libraries as possible. And that's important because year two of our project will focus on these community engagement roundtable discussions, which will bring both library and emergency response partners together from across the US to have a conversation about our survey findings, as well as generate some ideas for further collaborations between libraries and community partners during emergencies. And really the goal of our project is to help libraries understand how they can play a role during emergencies in partnership with these emergency response groups, and ultimately to increase the safety, emergency preparedness, and resiliency of their communities. So that's the general idea of our project. We're really excited to have it. I'd be happy to answer any questions right now. Unfortunately, my PowerPoints and my internet were not communicating with each other. But I will put my email in the chat, as well as our project email. So if you have any questions, you can reach out there, or I'm happy to answer any questions right now.
Thank you, Kelda.
All right, thank you so much.
Okay, moving on to the Illinois School Library Workers Symposium, Leah Gregory.
Good evening, everyone. The Illinois School Library Workers Symposium took place on September 20th with amazing attendance. Out of 305 registered attendees, more than 250 people were online at all times during the day. So we had just really incredible engagement. It was a high energy day. The people who were putting it on were very exhausted, but the attendees really loved it. Illinois Heartland issued the PDH. We have issued more than 300 hours to more than 60 people. And we've gotten very appreciative feedback from our attendees. So we were very happy with how it went, and planning for the 2024 symposium starts on November 13th. And that's all I have, unless you guys have any questions.
Hearing no questions, thank you, Leah. Okay, C, board learning, board intranet overview. Stacey, I believe you've got this one.
Good evening, everyone. As the senior board members know, we have this board intranet where we keep a plethora of information for you to have at your fingertips at any time, and you see the front page there.
Yes.
Yes, we see it.
I'm sorry. We like to keep a lot of information all in one place for you: information, documents, calendars, links to resources. There's board meeting information on the board meetings page. You will find generally the board meeting packet is at the top of the page, along with any sensitive documentation that we do not share with the public. This the entire intranet is only accessible by the board and our senior leadership here at IHLS. There's also a lot of board documents and forms, for example, travel reimbursements or economic interest filing, directions, and other resources that you can find there. We have a board calendar of events that gives you an overview of what's going on throughout the year. We have the monthly meeting calendar that gets posted generally a few days after our board meeting for the following month that will show your committee meetings, days and times. And then we also have the layout of the committees and their regular schedules posted there as well under news. Other documents you can find are email instructions, board citation info, resources, new board member information, travel reimbursement forms, Open Meetings Act information, and board members. We appreciate your time listening to this evening. I would always be welcome to hear any suggestions you have for information you would like added to this the board intranet, and I also would appreciate feedback on how you find it, if you find it helpful, if you visit it, and because my goal and our goal is to give you as much information as we can to make sure that you have everything at your fingertips so that you don't have to dig or ask for things. Thank you.
Thank you, Stacy. Okay, moving on to human resources, a staff report, attachment 12.1. Leslie?
Yes, sorry. So on the staff report this evening, we have one new hire. It is a sorter for the Champaign location.
This is Josh. I will move to accept the staff reports.
Do we have a second?
This is Leto's second.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Okay.
On the market rate adjustments, I thought when we approved the budget or approved the raises that all of this now is going to be done at one time. So there is one raise depending on market rate, percentage, et cetera. And then I'm seeing that this is being done in October now. So now this would be a second raise for the person. I'm wondering why the shift.
The reason that we have Shandy's, Ms. Penrod listed there is because her peer, her partner, who is the communications and advocacy administrator, when we started this fiscal year, she had a new position description and that had to go through the process. But it had a subsequent effect on the marketing administrator's work as well. So we had to also have their position description reviewed. Jill, is there more that you can share about that as to why?
We did. HR Source evaluated the job description, and in doing so, it went from a pay grade 7 to a pay grade 8. Therefore, that's what caused the increase of the $3,600 annually. Does that answer your question?
Well, I guess I'm just wondering why this isn't done all at one time. And then my other question is why the board isn't approving job descriptions. I've never been on a board that did not approve job descriptions. So I guess
I've never been on a board that did.
Yeah. I can explain why it's being done now, because we had to finalize the job duties of the communications and advocacy job description before we could determine how it affected the marketing administrator. So we could not do those two simultaneously until we figured out the role of that communications administrator and advocacy individual. So there was no way for us to anticipate what would or would not change. And therefore, in updating her job description to reflect her current responsibilities, it had to be evaluated because that's how we proceed with any type of HR source market adjustments. And that's how we've done it.
My second question is, because it's related to money, why the board is not approving the job description?
And this is Kevin Lake Toast. I've never been on a board that approved job descriptions. That's always done within the director's, because she is in charge of the staff. We are in charge of her. She's in charge of the staff. I think it's bad form for the board to get involved in things at that level within an organization.
And that coincides with what the Attorney General said in the past.
Yes.
So it's very much in line with the state.
But I disagree with that, but that's okay. Like I said, I just feel like we need to be responsible and approve those because it's connected with money. So.
Well, as was pointed out, the only person that we are responsible for is Leslie. She is in charge of the rest of it.
Right. But we haven't approved her job description either, so.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Could you call the roll, please?
Karen Bounds?
Yes.
Loretta Broomfield?
Yes.
Frank Buckingham?
Yes.
Ann Chandler?
Yes.
Jenna Griffith?
Yes.
Sarah Hill?
Yes.
Ryan Johnson?
Yes.
Kevin Kelly?
Yes.
Tammy Krause.
Yes.
Leitos.
Yes.
Christy Lear.
Yes.
Linda McDonald.
Yes.
Emily Pickell.
Yes.
Josh Short.
Yes.
Okay, we have no secondary employment tonight. We have no personnel tonight. Going on to committee reports, the executive committee met after everybody else did except for personnel because we had to reschedule that one. We basically talked about everything that you're hearing tonight. We heard from the auditors, a brief report, and the reports from all the other committees that you're hearing tonight. Budget and finance, Kevin?
Yes, we met and, of course, approved our normal stuff. We had the auditor presentation from what it was at that time and went through and listened to that.
Thank you. Policy and membership, Linda?
We discussed the public comment policy and tabled it until the other policies have been revised. And we also discussed the revision of meetings by electronic means. We had a discussion on a new language and points of order in the existing policy and attendance of members. Once a quorum has been achieved, this revision will be also considered by the executive committee.
Thank you. Facilities and operations, Tammy.
We met on September 12th. We heard an update on the Edwardsville roof. There had been some standing water issues having to do with the roof was replaced in May. For anyone who's new, there were some problems with some settling that had happened over the years and some. We learned a new word called scuppers, and those have been added. And things are back on track. The automated handler system, an update. They're working with the consultant for putting together an RFP. The surplus vehicle, the replacement box truck has arrived, so it went out on auction and has already been posted on the website. Under new business, we heard about the new bed bug procedure. We were pleased to hear there had been no cause for the bed bug procedure other than just a good policy. And that has been disseminated in the member connection newsletter. Edwardsville tuck pointing RF, RFP was released last year that needs to be reworked. So they are working on that. And we heard about vehicle ordering as well.
Thank you. Personnel, finally met. And we talked about, well, actually, we reviewed new and revised job descriptions for fiscal year 24. We reviewed the HR source pay grades based on the pay grade scale effective July 1st, 2023. Advocacy and education did not meet. Let's move on to our partner reports. Association of Illinois School Library Educators, Leah.
Hello again. Just a short update. First of all, the conference is taking place October 1st through 3rd. There's a good group of us going. IHLS has been invited to present on opening day concurrently with Rails. They're going to divide the attendees up by system, and we sort of have a captive audience to talk to them about the benefits of being an IHLS member. We are also finalizing the one pager of library data and advocacy tool that is going out to the superintendents. I think it will be finalized and voted on at our October meeting and submitted to ISBE to disseminate. And then one other thing is that IHLS is updating their standards booklet. It's called Linking for Learning. If you're a school librarian, you know that we call it the Bible. They are revising it for 2024. They are looking for partners to help them get endorsements from regional offices of education, the library systems, and potentially, hopefully, even the Illinois Secretary of State. So they put out an appeal for that. And they also have invited IHLS to submit an article. If you've seen the Linking for Learning booklet, there's multiple articles before the standards begin that just talk about things that people need to know about being a school librarian in Illinois. And they've asked us to submit an article about system membership. So we'll be working on that. And that's all I have.
Thank you. On to Illinois Library Association, Ryan.
Thanks, Karen. Hello, everyone. So early bird registration for the conference ends this coming Monday, October 2nd. So if you've not yet registered and you're intending to do so, early bird special ends on Monday. As for the conference itself, it runs the 24th through the 26th of October. As previously mentioned, there is a reception at the Illinois State Library. We also have a trivia night scheduled one evening and ghost tours as well. Additionally, we are partnering with the Central Illinois Food Bank to collect donations of food items as well as monetary donations to give back to that community during our stay there in Springfield. There's also a buddy program that has been relaunched. This first came about in 2019 for that conference and then was put on hold during the COVID years. But the buddy system is targeted at assisting first-time conference attendees who might be coming from a very small library and they're the only person there that they may know. So this buddy system will partner up people so that people don't feel kind of alone or anonymous or isolated at a big conference such as that. It's a conference season at ILA, if you haven't noticed. But I'm happy to take questions about that or anything else that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Okay, ISLAC, Illinois State Library Advisory Committee, have they met?
No, we've not yet met.
Okay. Moving on to unfinished business, fiscal year 2024 annual meeting. We need a count for attendees at this year's annual meeting, so if you plan to attend at Edwardsville, please let Stacy know. Leslie?
Great. We look forward to this annual meeting. We like, now that we're back in being able to meet in person, it's really good to be able to see people. The presentations that we have lined up for that are one state legislature is, legislators going to be there. Two member libraries have presentations, and there'll be one IHLS staff presentation. So a little bit of continuing education, a little bit of networking, hopefully means a really good meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to new business, the hiring procedure, attachment 16.1. Leslie?
Thank you, Karen. As we continue to work through the policy and procedural changes necessary now that we've returned to in-person meetings, I had a long conversation with Phil Lenzini, our legal counsel, to review our current hiring process. And I also asked for a recommendation that will allow us to keep critical positions filled and also maintains the board's statutory authority to make hiring decisions under 75 ILCS. So, and what is driving this is it was easier during the pandemic when we were meeting remotely to call a special meeting to hire, to approve hires. It's not so easy now. And I know how, well, a lot of you have a long drive just to get to a meeting place. And we're not always going to be able to accommodate or have every hire noted and approved before we need to bring them on board, if that makes sense. Do you have any questions?
I think it's fine. I'm not sure as a board why we approve the hires and fires anyway. So
okay.
As far as I'm concerned, okay.
Agreed. I can remember. Go ahead.
I've had the same conversation. I think me and Ryan had that conversation last year coming back from Carbondale. We don't approve hires and fires at the board level in Highland. I don't think most libraries do. Rails, I believe, doesn't either, right?
Correct.
So correct. I feel like this is something that we could probably not, you know, that's just my opinion. Think it's necessary either.
What was the purpose behind it? I never understood this.
So the purpose behind the approval is that the board is aware of the expenditure of a large amount of money.
We approve the budget.
Correct. You do.
That should be sufficient.
Correct. I don't disagree with you, but this is as far. I mean, not
this was
not having to schedule.
Sorry, Leslie, go ahead.
Thank you. Not having to schedule interviews that coincide for every position like the week before a board meeting so we can get them on the board packet will be a huge change for us already. Okay. And this ensures that it's maybe a more narrow reading of 75 ILCS in that one section for board responsibilities, but it ensures that we are doing our due diligence and we are sharing that with you. So.
It's just a very conservative way to go. That's all.
I think that as a board, we are to be fiscally responsible. So anything dealing with finance, it should come through us. And I realized it was much simpler. So we could just go to our computer and go on the Zoom. The termination part, though, you know, I can remember a time where we didn't agree. And that on a person that was terminated or processed. So I think that's kind of reckless if we allow that as well without going through the board, and it doesn't protect you either.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. We approve a budget, we approve and are responsible for Leslie to operate the systems. I didn't interview the person, so I can't say whether to hire him or not. I don't work with the person day to day. I can't say whether to fire him or not. That's why we have Leslie in place. I feel like I'm fine with the way that she's presented it tonight, but in general, I think it should just be a notification to the board that I hired this person and they have joined.
Can I ask what it would take? Would we go through personnel committee to make that sort of change if we wanted to? How would we proceed?
You mean that so that the hiring wasn't, yes. I think we would just do it and then see what the response is. Because it's true, Rails does not follow this process.
Thank you.
So, yes, if you want to, yeah.
Maybe it's something we could discuss in the exec.
We could,
and
yes.
And then move it forward from there.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to meetings via electronic means policy update. This is our first read. Ellen?
Sure. Good evening, everybody. I've never done many documents that needed a color key to them, but this one is one. So if you look at the proposed revisions and cleanup of this policy, the language that's in blue is new language that was recommended to us by council. The first piece at the very beginning describes and confirms the need for a quorum being made by board members attending in public buildings. And that's something you've all been working on. The last piece at the very end talks about public comment and ensuring that no matter how people attend the meeting, there is a venue for public comment. So those are the blue pieces. The yellow pieces that are highlighted are all procedural pieces that we wanted to bring to everybody's attention to know that this is how the meetings will be conducted. We have struck out all language referring to committees on this because moving forward, committees will be advisory, so they won't be bound by the same rules that the general board will be bound by. So that's the blue and the yellow and the strikeouts. The piece for your discussion tonight is the red piece, and that has to do with people, the parameters about people attending once a quorum has been achieved in that public body. So for the purpose of discussion on that document, you see the four standard exclusionary pieces that are used in most meetings. Employer's business or system business requires absence, personal illness or disability, family or other emergencies, and childcare obligations. And in Leslie's backgrounder that she sent to accompany this document, she reviewed what the committee, I know the policy and membership committee was able to review this. I don't think the executive committee got to it. So we have the comments from the policy and membership committee. One person, there was some feeling at the committee meeting that once a quorum had been achieved by people attending in public bodies, there was no need to specify any reason for other people attending via Zoom. Our legal counsel said, you know, this policy is the board's policy. It is your decision to make. He did caution, though, about making it so permissive that it indicates that it doesn't value the public's right to attend and observe board member interaction. So that red piece, I would encourage you to have to discuss how you would like this policy to read.
Any comments?
That we need to just leave it wide open for people on the reason they can't attend or have to attend by Zoom, as long as there is that quorum available. And as far as it making it so permissive, it does not value the public's right to attend or observe board interaction. I think, as you can see from these meetings, and we're all in these different rooms, most of the folks, you can't see their faces or how they're reacting anyway. You could do that better over Zoom, which we don't have. So I don't see any reason to tie us in, or if somebody can't attend and it has to be one of these four reasons, why either make them lie or why make it public knowledge why they can't be there, as long as they're there doing what they signed up to do.
Good point.
Any other comments? Okay, this was our first. Go ahead.
I have a comment. This is Sarah.
I also agree that it needs to be a bit more broad. So for example, let's say like vacation isn't listed there. What if I'm on vacation, two of you guys get sick, can't come to the meeting. I can't physically be there, but I could still Zoom in that way. Like, so to me, that's kind of, it's not listed as one of those reasons, but it would be a good reason for me to attend via Zoom if I'm able.
Agree.
I agree with that, and weather-wise, I mean, there is a difference in weather between Carbondale and Springfield and Champaign. So it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm starting to get snowed in. I'm not going to venture out. I'm going to attend by Zoom. So I just think as long as you have the quorum you need, which we definitely need, and then leave it wide open for people, because who really cares as long as they're attending after you have the quorum?
I definitely see the value of in person, and I'm finding that more and more a case, even in my job, which I've started going back to the office with. But having a broader option, I think, is definitely valuable. Board members should be encouraged to attend at a physical location if at all possible. But, you know, it should be our choice or our situation and broader, so we can choose to actually Zoom in.
Well, one of the things that this brings up too is that we have to make sure that we register for the meetings and that we let them know where we're going to be. It's a little aggravating on the day before the meeting to know that we haven't met quorum because some people haven't signed in. So kindly register for the meetings as soon as you can. And that would alleviate some of the, what are we going to do if we don't have our quorum? And that would also take care of some of the issues around where you attend. If we have our quorum, you could attend from someplace else, but we have to have the quorum. And we have to have people who are willing to try and make that quorum each month. That's my 2 cents worth anyway. Does anyone have any other comments?
Really valid point. It is. It's a valid point. That was my comment.
Okay. All right. This was a first read. Going on to the fiscal year 2025 nominating committee. In an effort to give the nominating committee as much time as possible to find quality candidates for the board election next spring, we will have the nominating committee approval at the October 31st board meeting instead of November. Positions that will be open next spring will be Public Library Trustee Representative and Chandler and Kevin Latos, both can serve a second 3-year term. Public Library Representative Ryan Johnson can serve a second 3-year term. School Library Representative Jenna Griffith may serve a second 3-year term. And Tammy Krause can serve a 1-year term as she is completing her 5th year on the board this year. So that's how that will stand. Okay, moving on to agenda building. What items do we need to have on the October board agenda? Policy for attendance via electronic means will have its second read and approval in October. And we will have the public comment policy and the personnel handbook policy updates.
So yeah, I was wondering the review of the bylaws, because the bylaws and this policy kind of go hand in hand. Because right now in the bylaws, it does not say in there we are advisory. So I would think that we would want to review the bylaws and then approve both of these at the same time, because it doesn't say advisory. And if we meet, I think that might pose a problem for us. So it might be simpler just to do both at the same time, so then the committee meetings have to be in person, because I know nobody wants that to happen.
So the plan on our end, and we already have an internal draft of where the changes in the bylaws need to be made, is when we're done with all these other policy changes, let's get them done. And then we'll also, right after that, I think in November, is when we're going to introduce the first version of the bylaws for a change based on the conversations and the decisions you guys are making.
I think you ought to have that in the minutes tonight, just to be very clear that you do have a plan for that.
Oh, we absolutely do. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's been discussed before, but having it in minutes is
okay.
Fine.
Okay. Thank you.
I would also like to know, we've never heard what goals were given for the director. We're told we would in July, and we haven't. And the other thing that we've decided with this is the suggestion from the board would be to have an evaluation committee. Josh did not want to do that because I think he was in his last month or two of being a president. So I think there needs to be part of discussion. The other thing I would like to see is, I don't know if any of you attended the SHARE town hall meeting, but I think we need an update as far as that goes as well, to see how some of these, if everything goes through, how some of this is going to impact our libraries, especially our smaller libraries.
Ooh, we have a update on the SHARE.
We did some in the spring, but they haven't voted
yet. We haven't received an update on the town hall if they had.
No, okay. I think
I'm asking
recorded.
A question.
I think those are
I'm
recorded.
Not
yeah, I believe they recorded, and there were three.
Okay.
So unless the SHARE governance wants to have more.
Okay.
Were you there?
Yeah, I was okay. There. It was just okay. Like last week, the one that I went to. So I'm sure Cassie's probably already working on an update.
I can't hear any more discussion, and I can't hear all of what you all are saying, so.
We can't either.
All right. I'm assuming we will put this statement on for appropriate staffing for school libraries that all of the other groups have approved. That will be on there?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything else? Okay, hearing none. Public comment? There's still no public comment. Do we have any announcements?
I have a public comment. One of the reasons that I brought forth that we spent over $1,000 in working lunches is simply I was at that shared town hall meeting. We have small libraries that are going to struggle, maybe not even be able to be part of SHARE because of the increase. And Aspen, the option for Aspen is way out of reach for them. I think as a board, we need to be fiscally responsible. And I also think that these working lunches, we're spending over $1,000, and we have small libraries that are struggling, very struggling. We are here as board members to represent library directors and oversee this, because this organization is supposed to be here to set example and to help our libraries. So this expenditure for working lunches to me, over $1,000 a month, I did check with Rails because I wanted to see what they did. I wanted to see if I was out of bounds, and they do it as well, and they don't. They do the lunches for who retires, who was hired. They do it for a holiday party. They might have a few snacks here and there, but the information I got back is they don't do these working lunches. I think it's just simply poor on our part to say, you guys can't afford this, but look at us spending $1,000 on simply lunch. They would like to just have $1,000 for books or just staff or something else. So I just feel strongly that we need to take a more little critical look at some of these expenditures. And I also think that we need to take a look at whatever SHARE proposes or see what we can do to help these small libraries and not have and have nots. So I just wanted to say that publicly as to why or what I feel on some of this. Thank you.
All right, duly noted. Do we have any announcements? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
This is Kevin Latos, I'll second.
Okay, we've had a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting, so meeting adjourned. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Yep.